Before we get into Otis Gibbs' music, a little about the guy. He's in his late 40s. He looks like a tough guy biker with a long beard and tattoos. However, he's one of the more gentle and down-to-earth musicians I've met over time. You can get an idea of that. He's speaking on a cell phone from his East Nashville home with us, with a cat on his lap. That cat has ties to Central Illinois. It's a cat he found in a cemetery in Petersburg, Illinois.
We're going to visit the grave of Edgar Lee Masters, who wrote the Spoon River anthologies, and we pulled into this graveyard. You know, there was a cat sitting on his tombstone, and it was a really strange kind of reverse calico Maine Coon. Just a kitten, looked like it was hadn't eaten in however long, and we sat out there walking around the graveyard probably for a half hour. And the cat just followed me around everywhere I went. And so we drive into town and we buy a box of cat food. And we're looking for the cat. And the cat's kind of up in a tree. And about 50 yards away, sees me, jumps out of the tree, comes running up, runs right to me and starts rubbing up against my leg. And I was like, oh, God, I can't take this cat home. I sat there for a little bit and thought, man, I can't leave this cat here. So I took her with me. We called her Baby Kitty. We thought we would call her Emily Sparks after a Edgar Lee Masters poem, but for some reason we just kept calling her Baby, and that became her name, which I should be a lot more creative than to name a cat Baby. But
Gibbs is one of those guys who a lot of musical artists genuinely seem to like. For instance, Billy Bragg has been one of the leading voices promoting Gibbs, and the two have toured together over the years. Gibbs now has a regular podcast where he talks to musicians called Thanks for Giving a Damn. In part, it stemmed from his wariness of doing interviews such as this.
If you're a musician, you have to play a song or something, but no one would ask an actor to come on and act, you know, to the show. That typically get treated in a more three-dimensional way. You know, I decided I'm going to make a show that's no music. It's just people telling their road stories. And
Gibbs says they're the kind of stories musicians swap, but people often don't hear. And Gibbs is able to ask about what some consider odd things, such as his obsession about professional wrestling from back in the 1970s. In fact, Gibbs sees a lot of parallels between professional wrestlers and professional musicians.
Seems like their lives were a lot like musicians' lives, where they're always on the go, always traveling. And, you know, not always the most comfortable situations, and you show up and you get, you know, you don't feel very good. You're a little beat up and you have to entertain people, and you do, you know, and the better people continue to be able to bring themselves up for it. And a lot of the pitfalls that the musicians find themselves falling into, seems like the wrestlers would fall into those also. So, you know, it's the closest thing we have to, you know, to the carnivals and the carnies and these days. So I enjoy all of that. And I'm surprised at how many musicians that I'll have on the show grew up around wrestling. And, you know, it's folks like Ray Wiley Hubbard, who got to hang out with wrestlers back in the 70s, when the Von Erichs in Texas were just, they were a really big deal. And Ray was partying with them. So he came on the show and started telling stories about that. I really love hearing that anyway. And if we were sitting backstage, that's what I'd want Ray to be telling me about. I wouldn't, you know, he doesn't want to hype everybody on his new record. He wants to tell stories. And why not put a mic in front of him and share that with people?
But we do need to get to Gibbs' music. He's got a new release out. It's his 7th album. And he did it through crowdfunding. He raised $25,000 in donations on Kickstarter to put the latest release together. He says it went well with his household philosophy.
We just treat it like it's a diner. You know, there's no rock star facade. We just think if we owned a diner down on the corner, we would know everybody who comes in, and we'd be part of their community. They'd be part of ours, and and they would know us. We just try to treat everything that way, and try not to make it too highfalutin. And people have responded to that, and I think that doing that fan funding thing, it fits in with that whole worldview. And I don't know what to say other than it was really humbling to have people, you know, before you ever make a record, you know that certain parts of it are taken care of. And just because there's people out there who enjoy what you've done in the past and are looking forward to what you're going to do in the future so much that they're willing to kick in to make it possible. That's a beautiful thing.
The $25,000 raised might seem even more like an accomplishment when, as one writer referred to Gibbs, he's the best unknown songwriter in music today. However, his new CD has the endorsement of Billy Bragg, who said the release, called Souvenirs of a Misspent Youth, has been a constant companion on his headphones over the past few weeks. Otis sets us up for the track we'll listen to today.
I grew up in a little town called Wanamaker, Indiana, and there's a little farming community. And my parents would work a couple different jobs apiece trying to make ends meet. You know, everybody around us wasn't doing that great, but we didn't realize, you know, that we, I don't want to say poor, but maybe we were. You know, we didn't realize that because everyone around us was the same way. And it's just later in life, people have a tendency to point out that you are, in fact, poor. And then it becomes painfully obvious to you. But I believe that the lessons, the greatest lessons that we learn from our parents are learned when they don't realize we're paying any attention to them, when they don't even think that they're teaching. I think Ghost of Our Fathers is a story that kind of goes along with that. We had an aging boxer living next door to us when we were kids, and you know, really nice man, and he was going through a pretty bad spot in life. My dad made a point of having me and him go over and just visit him for whatever reason quite often, just spend some time with him. And, you know, we would sit there on Saturday and watch Dick the Bruiser, you know, and the Crusher ward off the terrible, you know, Valiants. You know, so we'd sit there and watch that sort of thing and spend time. And I just was too young to really realize what was going on. But hopefully the song will explain that better than I can. It's called Ghost of Our Fathers.
He was almost blind. They say it happens when you've been punched too many times. But his hands were stone. He was a bare-knuckle champion in an earlier life. It was hard not to stare. Had his busted-up nose and cauliflower ears. When he'd smile at me and say the toughest fighters have their souvenirs. How to carry on when the hardest punch is thrown. Take away the burden from our shoulders. He lived next door. He'd sometimes get with my father and talk about life. Sit on the porch, drinking beer and remembering happier times. I was a child, but I was far too young to ever understand what it meant to have a son who'd been drafted and killed in Vietnam. How to carry on when the heart punch is thrown. Take away the burden from our shoulders. My father and I tried to keep him company so his mind could rest on Saturday nights, huddled around a black and white TV set. We all stood and cheered when Holly knocked out Foreman that night in Zaire. And later that night, my father held his hand as he broke down and cried. There stands a wall in a clearing across from the National Mall, crowded with names of the thousands of children that never came home. I stood in the rain, watching dozens of mourners stumbling by. When I saw his name, I felt the ghost of our fathers kneeling at my side.